It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Levy, former Fox News and CNN HLN guy and current cable news conscientious objector. I'm a former libertarian who now sits comfortably on the left.
Hi, I'm Danielle Moody, former educator and recovering lobbyist. But today, I'm an unapologetic woke commentator on America's threats to democracy.
And I'm producer Jesse Cannon, and I'm here to make sure things don't go too far off the rails.
We're here to have fun, smart conversations with some of the most knowledgeable and entertaining people in politics, media, and beyond.
Our goal is to try and make sense of our current crazy world, our new abnormal, and hopefully even make you laugh through the tears.
What a great show we have for you today. Former MSNBC political analyst Mehdi Hasan joins us to talk about his new media company, Zatteo, and how the media's coverage of Donald Trump may be worse than it was in 2016. Then, Bulwark editor Jonathan V. Last is here to rank presidents and talk about one little old Tom Cotton and his call for violence against protesters. But first, let's have some fun.
So, Danielle, we are right at 200 days out from the election, I guess, on the day that this episode drops, as I like to say.
As they say in the biz.
It's an inside baseball. It's a little term of art I like to use. It is also the fourth anniversary of the new abnormal. And I have to say, working with you these past 4 years, Danielle, has been, it's been tremendous. And I feel like I've learned a lot. It doesn't feel like 4 years, but then, you know, when we were told, hey, this is the fourth anniversary of the podcast, I was like, well, obviously it's been 4 years since Danielle and I were co-hosting the show. I just have to say thank you for making the time fly.
Yeah, it's almost like I can't remember 4 years ago in being here. But congrats to the new abnormal and 200 days until the election. And it's like my nerves would have no idea. It's not like I'm drinking more or not sleeping. It's not like my meditation app is the only thing on my phone anymore. So that's good to know.
Oh, don't make me laugh. The hangover hurts too bad.
Thank God for Z-Biotics.
Yes.
I'll be sure to alert Commerce to that.
Okay, good. So we're 200 days out from this election. And by the way, all jokes aside, shout out to Molly Jongfast, who brought me on. Love her for that. As we deal with, I think, in every election that I can remember, one of the candidates is on trial. And this time around, it's Donald Trump. And we are in the midst now of jury selection in the case involving his payments to Stormy Daniels, which a lot of people are referring to as a hush money case. I like to call it the election interference case. And we're going through jury selection now. And it's been, I guess I'm just using a lot of inside baseball terms today. It's been a shit show.
Yeah.
We've got jurors who are saying, hey, I'm not doing this because my identity is becoming public. And it's been a horrible situation. And as many people have pointed out, this is basically, it's like a mob trial. It's like a mafia trial. It's like a John Gotti trial. It's absolutely insane that this guy is the Republican candidate for the president of the United States. And jurors are literally and legitimately fearful for their lives and for the lives of their families if their identity becomes public.
I mean, I just think that it is absolutely horrendous that by following your civic duty, which is being called to jury duty and sitting, that your entire life can be turned upside down. That first off, I just want to say this before I get into the mobster that is Donald Trump, that is the Republican Party cult, is these reporters who are offering up details about what these jurors look like, their hair color, their stature, where they work. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I know that Judge Merchan has said basically that, like, this is ridiculous and you need to not be offering such like deep details about these people. Like, it defeats the purpose of having an anonymous jury if in fact you're like, well, the freckled one who works at New York Presbyterian, yeah. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? So I think that there needs to be a directive that is punishable to reporters that are covering this. Right? Like, you need to say nothing other than juror number one, number two, number three, number four, and like keep it moving for these people's safety. And so this goes into the fact that every single judge outside of Aileen Cannon, who's just a fucking waste of skin, but every other judge that is overseeing a case that Donald Trump is involved in needs to treat this with the seriousness and the attention and the directives that they would if they were overseeing a case by John Gotti, if they were overseeing a case by a ringleader of a drug cartel. Because there is no difference between the actions that Donald Trump and his thug-ass attorneys have been taking that are jeopardizing the safety and the well-being of the judges, of the clerks, of the prospective jurors in these cases. And so if you went in with the mindset of the fact that, no, I'm not going to provide this person with a level of like dignity and respect because they're a former president of the United States, but I'm going to provide them with the same energy that I would if it was a Gotti that was on trial. Like, that's what you need to be doing in order to protect these people that are doing nothing more than their civic duty and who, because of an unlucky draw of the deck, are now potentially having their lives threatened.
Yeah, for sure. The media takes so much blame here. And it's just every time I want to defend journalists and you know, the profession of journalism in general, things like this happen and they just make me go, man, this is like, you can't be doing this. And Jonah Bromwich, who is doing part of the New York Times, has been doing like a live thing on the jury selection where, you know, they post little things like a live blog type situation. And he posted today, he said, "We are in a remarkable situation covering an unprecedented case of immense public interest and blocked in many ways from reporting on the constitution of the jury. The trial is not televised and we are the public's eyes and ears, but at the moment we are limited in what we can relay." Yeah, he goes on to say, "The judge's priority is protecting the prospective jurors and his order is bent toward that aim. It remains to be seen whether we will reach a safer way to report on elements of the trial that are not directly on the record." Well, the problem is, Jonah, that the judge is being forced to do this because you and other journalists have been wildly irresponsible. And there is a safer way to report on this, but you all haven't been doing it. And as you pointed out, they're giving enough identification markers for some of these jurors and prospective jurors that it's easy enough for people to figure out who they are. And there was a nurse who you mentioned, and enough information was given out in by the news that friends of hers were like, they were easily able to identify her and know that it was her.
Mm-hmm. Which is wild.
Right?
If somebody were to say, oh, these are the last tweets that went out, or this is like, you know, this stature and they work at this place. Like, your friends and family should not be able to figure that out. And if they do, then you know that Trump's goons absolutely will.
For sure. And here's what the nurse, who has since been excused from serving on the jury, here's what she said to the judge. She said, "I definitely have concerns now about being in public. Yesterday alone, I had friends, colleagues push things to my phone, questioning my identity as a juror. I don't believe at this point that I can be fair and unbiased and let the outside influences not affect my decision to be in the courtroom." And there's two things here. One is the obvious, as we've been saying, she should never have to be put in this position. But the other thing is, this is what Trump wants.
Yep.
And the journalists who are doing this are doing his dirty work for him. And they are out there giving away everything but the name of the person who might serve on the jury, who's a prospective juror. And that's what he wants. He wants to spread fear. He wants to spread terror among the juries. Again, exactly as a mob boss does. And there is no difference. There is no daylight between this and a mob trial. That is exactly what this is. And as you said, Danielle, the judge, all the judges in all of his trials have to approach this in the same way. And they have to take this incredibly seriously. and Judge Merchant appears to be, this is not on him. But journalists have to do this the same way, whether it's, you know, if this was a, like you said, a drug cartel, if this was El Chapo on trial, you don't want to be giving out information that lets people know who the jurors are. It's the same thing.
Again, I know that we say this, so I sound like a broken record all the time, but I really don't know what these judges and the media are waiting for. Are they waiting for people to just start disappearing? Are they waiting for some death and grave harm to come to people to recognize, like, the stakes at which Donald Trump is playing with right now? Like, I just want to contextualize it again for folks. Donald Trump has 4 indictments and 92 charges against him. This all goes away if he becomes president of the United States. Donald Trump is willing to do anything and everything to make these cases go away. And then if he's able to do that, then to punish everyone, right, who even thought that he wasn't above the law. You have to understand the stakes, and that when somebody like Donald Trump, when a mobster has their back up against the wall, they will take down the entire fucking building in order to get out. And that's like the grave situation that we're in these cases, in this country. And like, these people need to stop playing games as if you're dealing with a normal fucking rational human being. I'm like, how many ways does Donald Trump need to show you that he is dangerous in order for people to start like getting it through their fucking heads?
Yeah, it's wild. And I don't really blame the judge in this case, Judge Merchant. I think he is kind of pissed off at the journalists, too, for publicly reporting potentially identifying information. And what he's done is he's now directed journalists to not report on one of the questions from the juror questionnaire, which is their place of employment, because that was one of the main things that was letting people figure out pretty damn quickly who these jurors were. I'm looking here at the Daily Beast, Jose Paglieri, who reported that Judge Merchant said journalists are being irresponsible, and he lamented how, quite, quote, we've just lost what probably could have been a very big juror in this case, and said that she had detailed being, quote, very intimidated by the press. He said, there's a reason this is an anonymous jury. And I'll quote from him again. It kind of defeats the purpose of that when so much information is put out there that is very, very easy for us to identify who the jurors are. So in this case, at least, I don't put this on the judge. I think he is taking this seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think he does realize what's going on here. It's these journalists who just, I honestly don't know what's going through their head. You don't have to report every single fact to the public. You don't do that every day. That's common sense. And for you to be out there doing this, it flies in the face of the phrase responsible journalism. And it needs to be stopped. It's already too late for some of the jurors, but going forward, it absolutely needs to be completely gone.
I don't even know what responsible journalism looks like anymore. I mean, aside from us, obviously. It's like anything for a click, anything for a post. I just don't know. But again, these are real people with real lives and livelihoods and families. We watched as Shay Moss and Miss Ruby were dragged through the mud. Yeah. We watched as they had to bring Giuliani to court to receive damages for the pain and the suffering and the moving that they have had to do. So we've seen this play out. We know what happens. And those, I mean, they're volunteer election workers, and their lives and their names are forever ruined because of these people. Imagine you're sitting now on a case that decides whether the former twice impeached, 4 times indicted, multiply charged criminal ass president goes to jail. Like, what?
Yeah. On top of everything you just said, this is a guy whose followers have already shown that they're willing to commit violence. You know, this is not like, oh, geez, I hope they're not the violent types. We've got January 6th. We've got other, you know, examples of his followers committing acts of violence. And so for this to be allowed, you know, and on top of all of this, we've got prosecutors are now saying that Trump has violated the gag order that Judge Merchant put on him 7 times already since this trial began like 3 days ago. You know, and he's doing other things like as jurors are being questioned in the court, he's sitting there and muttering about them. And all of this is juror intimidation, plain and simple. And the jurors know that. And Trump knows that. I don't understand why everybody doesn't know that. I'm not a lawyer. I know that comes to a shock to a lot of people listening to this podcast. So I don't know the procedural order here. I don't really understand why Judge Merchant has set a separate little hearing to see if Trump has violated the gag order. But he set that hearing for next week. So that does nothing. You know, for the next week, Trump can continue to make his little posts on Truth Social. He was caught using a cell phone in the court, which is against the judge's orders. Dude has fallen asleep, I think, pretty much every day of the trial at this point. Look, at least when he's sleeping, he can't intimidate anyone. So let him sleep, I guess. But this has to be gotten a hold of. And there have to be consequences at some point before somebody innocent pays the price.
Okay. We have done, I think, Andy, a very good job in laying out how Donald Trump is analogous to a mob boss. Well, don't take our word for it. Now, let us bring you to exactly how Donald Trump and the RNC are moving against down ballot Republicans. So, according to Rolling Stone, this shit is just wild. I'll just read you the title, folks. Trump demands cut of donations to down ballot Republicans who use his name. So I just want you to understand, this is what this means. You can't make it up. So according to Politico, the Trump campaign sent a letter to vendors informing them that, quote, all candidates and committees who choose to use President Trump's name, image, and likeness split a minimum of 5% of all fundraising solicitations to Trump National Committee, JFC. And also, any split that is higher than 5% will be seen favorably by the RNC and the Trump campaign. So it's not enough to hawk Bibles. It's not enough to try and sell tacky ass sneakers. Now, Donald Trump is putting a fee, a 5% finder's fee, on down ballot Republican candidates who, by the way, based on what the RNC has voted on, are no longer actually receiving any money from the fucking RNC.
Right.
So let us all be clear about that, that all money and all resources from the Republican National Committee go to Donald Trump and his family. So if you're running for office as a Republican, not only are you not receiving any funds, but now you need to tithe 5% to the church of Donald Trump.
This is like the scene in the movie or the TV show where the enforcer goes into the establishment to get his share of the protection money to be paid to the Don. It's absolutely unreal. And it's just, and then the part where that you read where any split that's higher than 5% will be seen favorably by the RNC and President Trump's campaign. And that, I mean, again, this is literally, this is the scene where, you know, someone says the Don would like you to do him a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that means. It means you do the Don a favor. So, because it's not going to go well for you if you don't. It is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it's textbook mob behavior. And, you know, I shouldn't compare it to TV and movie shows because the comparison is to real life mob behavior that's portrayed in these shows. But this is plain and simple, cut and dried. This is the mafia. He is running the RNC as a mob, right down to the fact that it's his family. It's a family business. Everything about this is, it's not even mob adjacent. It's just straight up mob tactics. I mean, as you said, this one's unbelievable, given that the RNC's new thing is, now that it's run by the family, is not to give any money to the down ballot people. And now he wants money from the down ballot people. It is just, it's absolutely unreal. But like you said at the top, you know, you don't need us telling you it's mob behavior, because all you have to do is look at exactly what they're doing.
It's a shakedown. You can't call it anything other than that.
Yeah.
To be very clear, just put it this way. When small business operators live in districts that have been overrun by gangs, one of the ways that they are able to stay safe or able to continue operating said business is to provide a cut to those gangs for quote unquote protection. Right. So if I'm bring, you know, so if you have 100% profit, well, now you have 70 because you're giving 30% over to the gangs, to the mobs, to whatever, so that you can continue operating your business. And you know what? But the boss would feel really good about 35 or 40%. Right. But you know what, Andy? That's up to you. Right. It's up to you. Wink and a smile. So I'm just wondering, like, do all of Trump's attorneys in their over, you know, in their suits and these fucking meathead looking dudes, are they just now just knocking on the doors of these Republican candidates with a tin out? You know, the boss has his eye on you. Have you offered up your tidings this month? They think that this is good. Because none of them are going to speak out and be like, this is crazy. You know, it's not, the Republican Party is more than Trump. They're not going to do that.
No, because you don't go against the family.
Because you don't go against the family.
You don't need to have had real world experience with the mafia. You just need to have watched The Godfather once or twice. And you know, you never go against the family. It is truly unreal. And I love the phrasing, though, you know, will be seen favorably by the RNC and President Trump's campaign. Oh, and by the way, it is routinely reported to the highest levels of leadership. Mm-mm-mm. It's as threatening as it can be. It's Mm-mm-mm. As much of a threat as it can be, as it's said with a smile. That's how they operate. And it's just, you know, everything he's doing with the jurors, this is the same MO with the same outcome. It is telling these people, you do what we want or it will not be seen favorably by the family. And you don't want that.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When picking a commerce platform for your business, you have two choices. Or,
I prefer, don't you?
That's the sound you'll hear when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell, online, in person, on social media, and beyond.
Shopify is the best all-in-one commerce platform capable of handling your business's complexity no matter how big you grow.
Step up to Shopify and harness the best converting checkout and the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands like Rothy's, Allbirds, Brooklinen, and so much more.
You're probably thinking, sure, but migrating is going to be a headache. Shopify's app store has the migration apps you need to migrate your products, orders, customers, and more from every major e-commerce platform to Shopify.
If you're anything like me, you're one of those don't put me in a box people. Everyone who knows me knows I'm a don't put me in a box person. And thankfully, Shopify never will, because with Shopify, control of your brand and business is always in your hands, from your storefront look to your back office operations.
I hate when checking out from an online store and then having to pull out my credit card and type in all those numbers. A Shopify store remembers my shipping address and payment information. So if I'm on the couch and my wallet is on the kitchen counter, I don't even have to get up.
Stop leaving sales on the table. Switch your business to Shopify and discover why millions trust Shopify as their all-in-one commerce platform to build, grow, and run their business.
Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/abnormal, all lowercase.
That's 1 month for just $1 at shopify.com/abnormal, all lowercase.
Shopify.com/abnormal. Folks, I am so very happy to welcome back to the new Abnormal Mehdi Hasan, who is the editor-in-chief and CEO of new media company Zateo News. Mehdi, so excited and congratulations to you on the launch of this new media company. Tell us about the name and also the reason behind you launching at this time.
Daniel, thanks so much for having me back on the show. It has been a busy week. We launched Zeteo on Monday of this week. It's an ancient Greek word going back to Socrates and Plato, which means to seek out, to inquire, to search for the truth, in their words. And I felt, my team and I felt, that this was an appropriate name for us. It was an ideal name for us in an age of misinformation, disinformation, fake news, open gaslighting. That is what we're about, trying to find the facts, trying to find the truth, trying to get to a reality-based world that we all want to live in. So what better name to give a new media company than Zeteo, the seeking out of the truth. Now, why a media company? Why not just go solo or freelance or start my own personal Substack after leaving MSNBC? I wanted to build something bigger, Danielle. I wanted to build an actual enduring institution, especially for progressives, for people on the left. I feel like the right have colonized all of the online commercial media space. The right, conservatives, a lot of the grifters have set up media companies and businesses and platforms in a way that progressives, leftists, even liberals haven't successfully done. You know, the liberals have, you know, Pod Save America and some of the crooked media empire and others. But I just thought, you know what? If not now, when? If not me, who? Why don't we try it? Why don't we see if I can build something? And actually, you know, to quote Field of Dreams, build it and they will come. And they have. I mean, we've got 160,000 subscribers week one. I mean, we did a soft launch in February, got a big influx of people. There's clearly a demand for it. This week, we rolled out all of our first round of contributors, people like Greta Thunberg, Naomi Klein, Kamal Bell, Cynthia Nixon, Rula Jibril, Spencer Ackerman. And a lot of those people are supporting me because they want this to succeed too, because all of us believe there is a massive gap in the market and we need something like Zeteo.
You know, and I couldn't agree more. And I think that that is obviously why you have so many subscribers. You know, I see that people are thirsty. They are thirsty for something that will give them the truth. I think that we have, as a country, as global citizens, have drank so much of the Kool-Aid over the last several years that up is, you know, we don't know which direction that we're looking in. And I, you know, to that point, there's just been, Mehdi, and I will say it, just some irresponsible journalism over the last 7 years. It's as if we have learned nothing. We don't know how to cover Donald Trump. We don't know how to cover a crumbling democracy. Talk to us about what you have seen, what you have been through, and frankly, the light that you have tried to shine. Is it intentional, do you think, in the ways in which journalism has gotten it wrong? Is it continued ignorance?
Yeah.
That for the reason, what do you make of where media and journalism is at this moment?
It's a great question. And you highlight a lot of important issues. And I was just doing an interview with someone else earlier today. And I said the same thing to them that I'm about to say to you, which is, we're in a much worse place today than we were even in 2016. Because in 2016, there was an ignorance argument, right? Look, this is new. We don't know how to cover Trump. We've never done anything like this before. As journalists, we don't know what to do. You know, we made a mistake. You know, you had Jeff Zucker, the then head of CNN, after the election saying, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have done hours and hours of Trump press conferences. We should have had an empty podium live on TV saying Trump about to come up. We had, you know, the head of CBS at the time said, you know, Trump may not be good for America, but he's good for our ratings. He's good for our bottom line. That was all 2016. Then in 2020, we saw, I thought, a slight improvement. We saw journalists willing to say the R word, racism, willing to talk about Trump's abnormality as a candidate, as a politician, as a president. Obviously, January 6th happened and everyone recoiled for about 48 hours. And now I think we've regressed to a point where we're in a worse position than 2016. We're in a worse position because Trump is a bigger threat than he was in 2016. Mm-hmm. And the media has no more excuses left as they had in 2016. We can't say, oh, we didn't know. Oh, we didn't realize that they were playing us. We didn't realize that this was gaslighting. We didn't realize the effect of the incitement to violence in our real world society. We thought we would give Trump the benefit of the doubt. None of that works now. We know who he is. We know what he's about. We know what he's done. And the idea that you can still treat him like a normal candidate, you can still give him platforms. You saw it with the CNN town hall last year with Caitlin Collins, which was the disaster some of us predicted would be. We saw it recently on CNBC, where he called in by phone to get softballs from the, is it Joe Kernan, I think it was, the host. You know, we mocked that idea in 2016 of Meet the Press having Trump allowed to phone in interview. All of that stuff, we are regressing, Danielle. It's just inexcusable. It's reckless. It's shameless. And the answer to your question is, I think it's a mixture of things. You can't blame ignorance, because as I say, there's no excuse for ignorance. But it is this sense of wanting to return to business as usual. Yes, two candidates, horse race, who's up and down, Democrat versus Republican. This guy's old and that guy's a little crazy. And that's what journalists love. They love a bit of, kind of be able to shift people into pre-existing frames and narratives and horse races. And they refuse to acknowledge that you cannot put Donald Trump in that framing. And again, one last point on this. Journalists are obsessed with this idea of the view from nowhere, of impartiality, of a fake neutrality. And I say this all the time. Journalists should have a bias for small d democracy. Trump is a threat to democracy, and therefore journalists should be willing to call that out because we have skin in this game.
Talk to us about the skin in the game piece, because this is also something that I think that I've tried to highlight here and in other places, is that we have seen since the end of the Trump administration, a revolving door that should have never been opened between those who served in the Trump administration and then those who would be welcomed with open arms into mainstream news, cable news, media outlets to provide commentary when for whether it was a year or the entire 4 years, lied to the American people every single day. It was their job to lie. Some broke away with Donald Trump only on January 6th, only to return to the bosom of insanity.
Kevin McCarthy, Lindsey Graham, Nikki Haley, we can go through the list.
I wonder, when we say that we have skin in the game, is it just blatant ignorance or is it craven greed at this point?
It's worse than all of that. If it was just craven greed, I could understand it. It is, you know, it's Charlie and the football. It's this naivete. It's this idiocy. It's this obsession with wanting to normalize everything and not treat, you know, your show is called The New Abnormal, not treat the abnormal as what it is, our new normal. So, for example, when the Trump administration was in office doing its awful things, I remember saying at the time to colleagues, I think I may have said it on air as well, you know, these people will all be forgiven and they'll be rehabilitated. And they'll be brought back. And it started happening in front of our eyes. Do you remember during the Trump administration, you had Sean Spicer who left after a discredited first round, first of, I think, four press secretaries. And he went off to be dancing with the stars. And he turned up at Harvard University, if memory serves me correctly. You had Corey Lewandowski, if you remember, on CNN as a paid contributor. And I was like, come on, this is what's going to happen. This idea that, oh, a few well-intentioned liberals are like, oh, these people are beyond the pale. They'll never be forgiven for child separation. They'll never be forgiven for both sides being Nazis. And yet, Jared and Ivanka are back on the party scene. Jared just got an award from the ADL. You go through the list of former Trump people who went off to corporate boardrooms and got rehabilitated. It's outrageous. And, you know, you can count on one hand the number of actual former Trump people who really, really changed, who came out of government and said, we got it wrong. We regret it. We will do everything we can to stop Trump. You know, I had Anthony Scaramucci on the first edition of my new show, Mehdi Unfiltered. We launched on Monday with Zatayo. Scaramucci is someone who, in my view, and I may be wrong, is genuinely contrite, genuinely, you know, sorry, and genuinely spending all his time trying to stop the re-election of Trump. Olivia Troy, who worked for Mike Pence. There's a few, a handful, who you can say, okay, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, Cassidy Hutchinson has endured death threats and everything else to go testify in front of the January 6th committee. Look, I wouldn't have served in the Trump administration. I think that will weigh on their consciences for the rest of their lives. But at least they're doing something now to try and atone. The rest of them, though, Daniel, come on. They just immediately just quickly move to the next life. Look at Ronna McDaniel and the farce that happened recently with my former employers with NBC. This is a woman who clearly, you know, says some mealy-mouth stuff. Oh, yeah, Biden's a president. She was up to her eyeballs in election denial. Mm-hmm, she was involved in the fake electors plot. And suddenly she's turning up on NBC News as a contributor. Mick Mulvaney at CBS News. Remember when the former chief of staff got a gig there? And that was, oh, we need access to Republicans. It's awful. The rehabilitation of the worst people who are not contrite, not apologetic. And even if they are apologetic and contrite, they don't deserve to get huge cable news deals off the back of it.
I mean, access is a drug.
We rehabilitate everyone in this country, Daniel. George Bush is now this cuddly guy who paints paintings and swats cockroaches with Michelle Obama at funerals, right? We we've rehabilitated the guy who should be in The Hague for Iraq. I am under no illusions. Here's a great irony, Danielle. If Donald Trump had gone quietly in 2020, if he said, I lost fair and square, see you later, I'm going to go off and promote my vaccine. The only good thing I ever did was get a vaccine to market in time. I bet you he'd have been rehabilitated within a few years and been back on various party networks and back on TV shows and treated like, aha, do you remember when Trump was president? Ah, I bet you that would have happened. The great irony of a man who wishes he was loved. Had he done that, this country is so forgiving, they probably would have rehabilitated Trump.
I mean, they're so forgiving if you have the complexion for that forgiveness. We are roughly 200 or some odd days away from the election with, I believe, roughly 40% of this country absolutely gone under MAGA and Trumpism.
Yes.
Which leaves a good 60% of us to wake up to the realities of how quickly a country can change under authoritarianism and fascism.
Yes, 100%. Anyone who thinks otherwise is deluded.
It's deluded. How do you, with Zateo, how do others break through the mendacity of horse race coverage to express very clearly to the 60% where, let's be clear, all 60% ain't going to vote, about how dire the situation is? Because when they look, Mehdi, at the last 4 years of Donald Trump, they say, well, we made it through. All wasn't lost and all didn't fall apart.
We survived his first term is what I hear often. We survived him one time around, which, by the way, is completely false. 500,000 Americans died from COVID, many of those preventable deaths. So that's not true that we survived Trump. That's actually quite offensive to hundreds of thousands of people who died unnecessarily. Look, the answer to your question is we got to keep trying, Danielle, in our own various ways as journalists to cut through the noise, to remind people of what's at stake. We at Zateo are making it very clear that that's what we are about on the domestic front, is reminding people about the dangers of authoritarianism and fascism, not both sidesing this stuff. And, you know, we just launched today John Harwood's column. John Harwood is a former CNN, CNBC, Wall Street Journal, very mainstream DC correspondent, has interviewed every president since George Bush Sr. And yet he, unlike a lot of his peers, recognizes the threat from MAGA and fascism. Chris Licht at CNN let him go because he went on air and called out Trump in very blunt terms. We've now hired him as a contributor. He's writing a weekly column called The Stakes, about what's at stake in this election, not about who's up and down, but what's at stake. I launched my first show, Mehdi Unfiltered, on Monday with a very detailed 7-minute segment about what Trump's first 100 days of a second term could look like. And we based it on what Trump has said and what people around him have said. It's not just based on my imagination. It's based on what they're saying out loud. So for me, yes, I'm very opinionated. Zateo is very opinionated. I don't hide my progressive politics. But this is a factual segment. We're saying, okay, here's what he said he would do. On day one, he's going to do this. On day three, he's going to do that. On day seven, he's going to do that. He's going to invoke the Insurrection Act to put the military on the streets. His words, not mine. He's going to attack Mexico. His words, not mine. He's going to pull out of the Paris Climate Change Treaty. We just went through the whole thing, and it's had 1.6 million views on Twitter in the first few days. I hope it cuts through to swing voters. I'm not trying to cut through to MAGA voters. Trump voters are lost. I agree with you. That's nonsense, waste of time going to diners, New York Times style, to talk to Trump voters who are in some kind of reality-free cocoon watching Fox 24/7. I'm trying to reach out to people in the middle who are persuadable, who are kind of misinformed or underinformed or low information voters who don't know, Danielle, because our media has failed them. Who, when you say to them, do you know that the defense secretary under Trump says he was told to shoot protesters in the legs? Did he say that? Do you know that Trump said he would terminate the Constitution? Did he say that? Well, most people don't know this stuff. So yeah, we're going to try and spread it far and wide.
I think that there is just such considerable danger. I don't want to say that they're oblivious. I don't want to say that people are not intelligent. But what would you call it when spoofs like Don't Look Up look more like reality? When we have a film right now called Civil War,
yes,
that is like breaking box office, you know, expectations, and it's supposed to be a sci-fi political thriller, but looks more like a documentary. It is not as if everywhere there isn't this whisper. And so, you know, my last question for you is it about trying to, quote unquote, save the 40%, wake up the 60%? What is going to be, you think, if you were to create one, the special sauce over the next 200 days that is going to break through the noise and the mendacity.
It's the journalistic challenge of our time, of our lifetime, in this, as you say, next 200 days or less, to really present to the American people the choice that is on offer. There's not a referendum on Joe Biden. There's a choice between two candidates. As Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez told me on Monday at the Zeteo launch event, she said it's ridiculous that the media is like, oh, this guy's old and this guy's a fascist. Those are not the same thing. I always think of one of my favorite old shows, Friends, when Joey goes and wears all of Chandler's clothes and Chandler says, that's not the same thing. Like, this is not the same thing. Whatever you think about Biden, we could talk about another day about his horrible Gaza policies. But on a domestic front, the idea that we should be able to compare these two men running and equate them in some way is bizarre. The idea that we shouldn't be able to be clear-eyed about what one side is presenting. This is not, oh, the far left extreme versus the far right extreme. The far left extreme, if it even exists, Joe Biden is not far left, sadly.
Yeah,
not
sadly.
Healthcare for everyone. The far right wants the great replacement theory, wants Nazis in office, wants to deport people en masse in the biggest deportation campaign in American history, to quote Donald Trump. So I think we need to be clear what's at stake. We need to be clear about it can happen here. We need to be clear about American fascism. We need to not be afraid about using words like fascism and racism and genocide when it comes to Gaza. That is what Zeteo is about. Some home truths, plain speaking, avoiding lazy euphemisms.
I'm so appreciative, one, that you have created this platform, that you've created this space, because to the point that you made at the beginning, there has been a vacuum when it comes to the left and progressives and the array of media outlets that we should have, that we don't. Right. When you have the Spotify's and the places of the world paying hundreds of millions of dollars to racists and misogynists and liars, and the right has a monopoly on radio, there needs to be a pivot point. I'm hopeful for you with Zeteo that this will be that pivot point at such a crucial time in our country.
Thank you, Danielle. We are trying hard. All of us need to really be doing everything we can and not relying on everyone else to pick up the slack. This is our contribution. This is what Zeteo is about in 2024. In 2025, we might be about something else. But right now, we're kind of a two-issue media company. It's the genocide in Gaza and it's fascism at home.
Amazing. Mehdi, thank you so much, as always, for making time for The New Abnormal, for the work that you're doing, for your just brilliant, sharp, analytic mind in these crucial times. We need it more than ever.
Daniel, thank you so much. That means so much, Daniel. And your brilliant questions. Always enjoy coming on the show.
Thank you.
Joining me now is Bulwark editor Jonathan V. Last. And believe you me, I have questions for him. Jonathan, I don't mean to sandbag you, but I want to talk about politics today, if that's okay.
Jeez. Okay. I mean, I'll try.
Okay. Let's start with this. I see that over at The Bulwark, you've done a presidential ranking. So I want to say, first of all, how dare you?
Yeah.
Who do you think you are?
I know. This is too much inside baseball. I did this because on The Bulwark podcast, our host, Tim Miller, my friend, probably your friend, had the New York Times' Ross Douthat on. And in an attempt to level set, he asked Ross if he could rank the last four presidents of these United States. And Ross just wouldn't do it. You know, Tim tried over and over, and Douthat was, well, I mean, it's so hard to say. And I was like, I don't know. I think it's pretty easy. It's not hard.
Give me your rankings for the last four.
Biden, Obama, Bush, Trump. I just don't think it's hard.
A true Republican.
I mean, here's the thing, right? You can make very nuanced distinctions. Like, I could give you Biden's my number one. I would say he's the only one of these four presidents who I'd say has been a good president. Even so, I could tell you half a dozen things he's done wrong. Even with Donald Trump, I think has been possibly the worst president in American history. I could give you four things that I think his administration did that were good. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to pretend that everybody is an angel or a devil. We can be grown-ups. And yet also we can make critical distinctions, because ranking them isn't hard. This isn't like saying who are the top five impressionist painters. You know, like, it's actually OK. It's not hard.
You went on to rank all the presidents of your lifetime, which was a horrifying way for me to find out that I'm older than you.
Yeah, sorry.
Because you stopped with, I think, Ford was your last one.
And I was an infant when Ford was,
sure,
was in the White House. So to be clear. And maybe that colors why I think so highly of him.
Right. I was actually a very, very young, but conscious human being for Nixon.
Oh.
And I guess technically I was born during LBJ's administration, which is really depressing when I
Yikes.
Think about it. But there you dropped Biden to three.
Yeah. And to be sure, like, it's a provisional ranking. I mean, look, if Joe Biden has a 2024 like Donald Trump's 2020, then he isn't going to be ranked up as a good president. Right. I mean, Donald Trump's 2020 is one of the worst years that any American president has ever had. He presided over the largest failure of the federal government, possibly since the Civil War. It resulted in hundreds of thousands of excess deaths from the pandemic, like deaths in excess of what we should have had. You know, so maybe the wheels could fall off the cart for Biden. I'm open to that possibility. My fundamental disagreement with the Douthatian view of these things is that you don't do this like it's a tally sheet where you tick down all 7,000 things that the president did and say plus one, minus one for the good and the bad, right? This isn't how we judge presidents. It's not how any rational human being would judge presidents. You judge them by the two or three biggest things during their term and did they get them right or not. And so, you know, like Ronald Reagan did all sorts of bad things, right? He was horribly late on the AIDS crisis. Lots of people died because of that. Not extra hundreds of thousands, but a lot of gay men died because of that. He, Iran-Contra was horrible scandal. He mucked around in Latin America. But on the other hand, he, not all by himself, but he was one of the larger drivers of the Cold War ending without nuclear Armageddon. And that's a very big deal.
Yeah.
And he deserves a great amount of credit for that and a fairly large amount of credit for reforming the regulatory state, which over the course of the 60s and 70s really had gotten overburdened. Reagan gets blamed a lot by liberals for things that happened under Republican presidents after him. I don't think that's fair. I think all in all, Reagan's presidency winds up being pretty successful. And number two for me was George H.W. Bush, which is scary a little bit. Because seeing that a guy like HW can lose re-election even while him being a fairly successful president and pretty universally acknowledged as a fairly successful president, I think most of the libs and Dems I talk to now in retrospect thinks that HW did a good job. That's not great in terms of thinking about, well, how well does this democracy machine of ours really work? Is it good at sussing out optimal outcomes?
I think that's fair. And the idea of the Republican Party electing anyone or running anyone like HW again seems very far-fetched right now, though, of course, things can change. All right. I want to move on from this because I want to ask you about Tom Cotton, the senator from, I believe, your home state of Arkansas.
Yes.
If my research is correct.
Natural wonder.
This guy who again, is somehow a senator, tweeted, "I encourage people who get stuck behind the pro-Hamas mobs blocking traffic. Take matters into your own hands to get them out of the way. It's time to put an end to this nonsense." Look, 8 years ago, this would have horrified everybody, I think. And now there is a fairly decently sized segment of America that's like right on. And this kind of terrifies me.
Yeah, it's really irresponsible, like absolutely horrifyingly irresponsible. Tom Cotton is one of the very, very few senators who I know personally a tiny bit. He's a smart guy. He is.
Well, he's your senator.
Normally, like, pretty thoughtful. He didn't go along with the people who were trying to overturn the election. And he's been very good on Ukraine and stuff. He's always been a foreign policy hawk, which I kind of like. Part of me just thinks this is him trying to butch up, because the truth is that he is naturally really on the wrong side of MAGA. And he's down there in, you know, Arkansas. And the truth is, I am where he is on basically the Hamas protests. I am basically opposed to any form of protest which shuts down like major arteries like bridges. I think it's A, horrible and dangerous. It inconveniences people. But B, is the absolute worst way to advance your cause in public. Like, if you want to turn people against your cause, go out and shut down a bridge somewhere. We have had, over the last 6 or 7 years, the beginnings of it being a thing for conservative type counter-protesters to go and run over the people they don't like. Heather Heyer was killed in Charlottesville with this. It has happened enough times with Black Lives Matter protests and whatnot that you had a bunch of states, including Florida, pass laws trying to shield people from vehicular manslaughter charges if they ran over protesters. These are, you know, they're framed as anti-riot laws. So this isn't, you know, it's not like Cotton is talking about some imaginary thing that nobody would ever do. It's not like he's saying, like, yeah, I wish I could put them on a rocket into the sun, right? I mean, he's he's talking about a thing that happens, and that happens often enough that Republican governors have tried to make laws making it legal. It's ugly and irresponsible.
But thankfully, he's been getting a lot of blowback from Republicans.
Yeah, they think he didn't go far enough.
Yeah.
There's never any blowback because you can't be on the side of the libs for anything. This is why it was, you know, I remember having a conversation with some former Republican friends early in the Ukraine saga, you know, and I said, hey, you guys better get ready because the Republicans are going to be four square against Ukraine in 5 minutes. And they were like, no, you don't understand. They're hawkish. And I was like, no. Problem is Biden and the Dems are on the side of the Ukrainians, which means that the Republicans in the long run can't be. Like, they just can't be on the side for anything. And you saw this. There was, I think his name is Garrett Graves. He's a congressman from Louisiana. He was one of Kevin McCarthy's top boys. He tweeted or said something on Fox over the weekend that was like, you know, Joe Biden wants aid to Ukraine. Joe Biden wants aid to Israel. Joe Biden wants to aid Taiwan. Why would we vote for any of this? What are Republicans getting out of it? I was like, oh, I guess Republicans don't want to give aid to any of these things because the Democrats do. Like, what is that? That's insane.
Yeah.
You know, Democrats should say they are in favor of people wearing seatbelts. So Republicans will stop wearing them.
Right. So along these lines, you know, it's interesting that you knock Republicans for doing this sort of thing. Yet, on the other hand, you seem to love Chris Sununu.
Yeah, I don't like Chris Sununu so much. He's one of, you know, you and I were talking in the green room about this. Like, I have some unhealthy obsessions, things I really need to talk with my therapist about. And Chris Sununu is one of them. I don't know why. Like, you know, why should Chris Sununu bother me? He's one of the good Republicans. He's one of the very, very few Republicans who actually endorsed Nikki Haley and tried to beat Donald Trump, and good on him for that. I think that was the honorable thing to do. But the extent to which this guy is just always lying and never telling the truth, it bugs the hell out of me. And I mean, both as a moral matter, but also philosophically, because Chris Sununu's view of wanting to get rid of Donald Trump and Trumpism has been he could lie his way around it, that like somehow he could trick and fool Republicans into abandoning Donald Trump. And I've just always thought that was the dumbest fucking thing in the world. You know, so Sununu is one of these guys running around in 2021 and 2022 and saying, yeah, Donald Trump's not going to be the nominee. It's impossible. Anybody says Donald Trump is going to be the nominee is just, you know, crazy. And he did this for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years. And then one day he, you know, shows up in the pages of the New York Times saying, we got to consolidate the field and rally around a single candidate because otherwise Trump is going to be the nominee. And I'm like, I'm sorry, asshole. 5 minutes ago, you were telling those of us who were concerned about the Trump 2024 thing that we were alarmist idiots. And the answer is, like, he's always playing games. Everything to him is like, oh, I'm going to find an angle. And so he shows up on the George Stephanopoulos' ABC show. I don't know, it was this Sunday or the Sunday before. And he's in full, you know, yeah, gotta support Trump. 51% of Americans support him. It's like, no, they don't.
Yeah.
Trump has not polled over 51% in any polling average ever. And he's run for president 3 times now. You know, like, this is just, it's just false. Sununu's weird rationalizations, I would understand it if he was on the make because he was a rising star. You know, like, if he thought, like, oh, I got to do this because I got to go get mine. But the truth is, MAGA hates him so much.
The Tim Scott model.
Yeah, right. Like, Sununu's career is over. He can't win a Republican primary in New Hampshire for dog catcher. So the weirdness of sucking up to MAGA when A, MAGA hates you, but B, your political career is over anyway. Is that like a humiliation fetish or something? Like, maybe it's a kink. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't seem like anything that a self-respecting human being would do. In fact, I normally would have thought it would go the opposite way, right? Like, you know, the people who are like laughing and jeering at you, you would say, fuck you, and go the other way just to spite them. But not Chris Sununu. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, no, it is. And you wrote a really good piece on it with the headline, Chris Sununu is either a mountebank, a coward, or a fool. And first of all, props for using mountebank, which is a word you don't hear that much these days, but one I kind of like. But you made an important point in writing this, and it may have been inadvertent. I don't know, Jonathan. But you quote Sununu as saying that one of the reasons that he'll vote for Trump, I think this was from that interview with Stephanopoulos that you were talking about, is that he wants a pro-business economy and that we need to have, you know, Donald Trump and the Republicans in to have a pro-business economy. And then you say The economy right now is so pro-business that the stock market is at an all-time high. And the important point that I think that you made here is that, at least for me, Sununu's dumb argument, which, as you point out, is just wrong on its face, but it's the same dumb argument we're seeing from a lot of rich guys whose attitude appears to be best summed up as fascism, smashism, just give me my tax cuts.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Like, could the economy be any better? I sound like Chandler from Friends.
Yeah, you do.
The concern we all have is that, like, oh, gosh, are we running too hot? You know, is growth too fast? I don't know. With Chris Sununu, it's really weird because he just ran for re-election in 2022. And you go back and his entire re-election campaign was based around, we are living in fat times, you know, like everything is amazing. New Hampshire is open for business. Business is booming. You get a car and you get a car. It's like DeSantis did the same thing in 2022. Like, you know, his campaign was things in Florida are the best they've ever been. And then he turned around and ran for president saying it's American carnage. Nobody can afford to. And so you had this weird thing where in New Hampshire, actually. So you had the guy running for Senate in New Hampshire, Don Bolduc, was running ads talking about how things were so bad in New Hampshire that people, New Hampshireites, God, the salt of the earth, the Granite Staters, they were being forced to choose between heating their homes and putting food on their table. And he was appearing on the same stage as Chris Sununu, whose campaign pitch was, reelect me because things have never been better. Right. And it's just like, what the fuck are you guys talking about?
Yeah. And then this, you know, obviously this doesn't just apply to the economy. And, you know, you wrote another piece on this about how Joe Biden has won the war on crime. It's a very similar situation, it seems to me, in terms of rhetoric, because you get all these people, by the way, not just Republicans, Democrats as well, you know, running their little fear campaigns about how out of control violent crime is and how we need to elect them to stop it. And then you look at the stats and you're like, well, hang on a minute, fellas.
Yeah, it's the craziest thing, isn't it? So I have come in my old age to believe that crime is basically just coded racism.
Of course.
Like it doesn't mean anything. Not always, not everywhere. I understand that. I just mean in general.
Yes, as a fear tactic, that's what it is.
We did, in fact, have a spike in violent crime in America, the highest spike in the history of the measurement. It occurred in the year of 2020.
When Joe Biden was president.
You know?
No, and, wait.
Yeah, right. This was literally, we lived through this American carnage moment where violent crime was rampant and it was Donald Trump's America. We just did it. And what we've seen since is steady declines. The last 2 years, the last year, 2023, was the single largest drop in the murder rate in recorded history. And the preliminary numbers for the first quarter of 2024 suggest an even steeper drop. All crime everywhere in America is down, both rural and in metropolitan areas, everything from burglary to larceny to rape to assault to homicide, with only one exception. And that is that auto thefts in metropolitan areas are up. And this seems to be due mostly to a security bug in Hyundai. So like if you live in cities and you own a Hyundai and you haven't gotten that patched, then you're more likely to have your car stolen.
And those people vote, Jonathan.
I guess. So I just look at this, and on the one hand, I suppose we don't really hear about crime anymore. I don't know if you remember, but leading into the 2022 midterms, it was all we ever heard about was crime.
Oh,
crime,
yeah,
crime,
for
crime,
sure.
Crime. And now it's just crickets. We don't hear about crime anymore. And so I suppose that that's a tacit admission that the problem has been solved. But nobody takes the step of then saying, well, I guess Joe Biden must have solved it. The truth is Joe Biden didn't solve it in the same way Donald Trump didn't cause it. That's not how electorates ever look at these things.
Right.
And the idea that suddenly everybody's going to get incredibly sophisticated and start parsing, well, do we really have to give Joe Biden credit for policies which were enacted at the city level? That's not supposedly how these things work. And so I would like to see him get some credit, but no.
I don't think you're going to see that. And I also suspect that crime, much like the immigrant caravan, will rear its ugly head again as we get closer to the election.
There's always another caravan.
There's always money in the caravans. Jonathan, thank you so much, as always, for being here. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I enjoy reading your stuff at The Bulwark and encourage everyone to do likewise.
Thanks, Andy.
Andy Levy.
Danielle Moody.
How are you closing out this good week, our 4-year anniversary week, with your Fuck That Guy?
My Fuck That Guy is someone you may have heard of. First name Clarence, last name Thomas.
Ah, yes.
He is a Supreme Court justice. There was a case before the court this week that had to do with January 6th and whether or not the prosecutors were too overzealous in charging the participants in January 6th. One of the charges is obstruction of an official proceeding, because obviously when they entered the building, entered the Capitol on January 6th, they were trying to disrupt the certification of the Electoral College results. Justice Thomas doesn't seem to think that's all that big of a deal. And he said, well, there have been many violent protests that have interfered with proceedings. Has the government applied this provision to other protests in the past? I mean, first of all, this is a guy who should be recused from anything having to do with January 6th, since his wife is one of the bigger proponents of what happened on January 6th. I mean, I know this has become the Republican playbook that started, I guess, not right away after January 6th, because we all remember, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about texting that she was scared, and Kevin McCarthy saying how awful this was. And then, you know, within a month or two, they had completely changed their tune. But downplaying the seriousness or the violence of what happened on that day has, again, become the Republican playbook. And now here it is for a sitting justice on the Supreme Court to completely downplay what happened that day and to act like the government should not be charging the people who stormed the Capitol with obstructing an official proceeding, when not only did they, that was, if not their main agenda item, you know, and reason for doing it, it was one of them. You always think there's a bottom, and then he's gone even lower. And this is a guy, this is one of the most powerful people in America who is doing this. I don't know. I guess I have nothing more to say about this other than just fuck that guy.
I fucking hate Clarence Thomas so much. Like, there is not a person, and I'm including Donald Trump, that I despise more, because he is so flagrant in his disrespect for this country, in his seat. But of course, oh, there have been other interruptions. Tell me the other time that some group of people stormed the Capitol building and tried to overturn an election result. Tell me the other time that that happened, right?
Yeah.
Their fucking ability to downplay what it is that white people do is wild to me. And like I continue to say, you do not need to be white in order to be a white supremacist. Clarence Thomas, case in fucking point. He shouldn't be anywhere fucking near this case, but he has absolutely no integrity, no values, and no morals. And also, paging Merrick Garland, where the fuck is the investigation into Ginni Thomas, who was one of the funders and helpfully one of the architects of January 6th? But, you know, we just let that slide too. Fuck all of them. Honestly, I've run out of it today.
Yeah, we let a lot of things slide, don't we, in this country?
Yep, we do.
All right, Danielle, close out this glorious, glorious week with your Fuck That Guy. Who we got?
Well, you know what apparently we haven't run out of? Marjorie Taylor Greene's fucking stupidity. That seems to be bottomless as well. Marjorie Taylor Greene says that America needs to take national security seriously. I mean, first of all, let me just put an asterisk by that, because I don't know what the fuck else we spend money on, because it pretty much only goes to defense. You can look at our infrastructure, our education system, and our healthcare and know we're certainly not investing it. But nonetheless, Marjorie Taylor Greene says that how we take it seriously, folks, hold on to your hats, because you know the Secretary of Stupidity, she has bars for this. We need to invest in space lasers. Unironically, she is saying this again. You know what we need to invest in? Education, right? Because if we did, then she would maybe also have a test to become a run for office, maybe half of these motherfuckers wouldn't exist in the first place. But she is infamous, you all know, for saying that Jewish space lasers control America. And now she's saying that, quote, by the funds made available by this act that apparently she wants to offer up, such sums as necessary shall be used for the development of a space laser technology on the Southwest border. Yeah. That's Marjorie Taylor Greene. That's her insight. The Secretary of Stupidity has spoken. So I'm sure that means the rest of us need to get activated and also, you know, figure out how to build this space later, maybe from the moon, maybe from Mars. No one knows. She watches too much TV and reads too much QAnon. I think that her brain is probably spoiled. Like, I think that her brain may be Swiss cheese because the things that this idiot fucking offers. And also, shout out to the people in her district. When you had the opportunity to ensure that you had better representation, you said, nope, that's Miguel. Come collect this woman. I had to stop myself from what I wanted to say, but come collect this fool, please. For that reason, this week, every week, until I no longer have to say her name, Marjorie Taylor Greene is my fuck that guy, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if maybe she's trolling by doing this. And then I realized I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
She's so stupid. And if it's trolling, it's dumb. And by the way, you're a member of Congress. You shouldn't be putting up bills with trolling in them. Or amendments, whatever the hell this is. And if you're not trolling, yeah, well, I think you already said it best. Fuck that guy.
Hope you enjoy checking out this episode of The New Abnormal. We're back every Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday.
If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend and keep the conversation going. This podcast is a Daily Beast production with production by Jesse Cannon and Seamus Calder.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.